from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
I would say the two constitutions that are increasingly at war in our politics are the original constitution, which I call the Founders Constitution, and the Liberals Constitution, which they like to call the Living Constitution.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Charles Kessler. We'll talk with him later on today's program about his brand new book, Crisis of the Two Constitutions, The Rise, Decline, and Recovery of American Greatness. First up, we talk with John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program at Hillsdale College, about Frederick Douglass, the journalist. We do so because Frederick Douglass celebrated his birthday on February 14th. He also died February 20th of 1895 at the age of 77. John, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Scott.
Talking today about Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass, the journalist. Frederick Douglass, people know as an abolitionist, but he was also a journalist, and that's where we come in today. Douglass was born into slavery, John. How did he become prominent?
Well, he's best known, of course, as you say, as an abolitionist. He was a great orator. He's a terrific speaker. We don't have any recordings of him, obviously. You can't go look up a Douglass speech on YouTube. We have contemporary accounts of this. We know he was just a spellbinding orator. How did he come to his education? As you say, he's born into slavery. He had an owner at one point whose wife actually began to teach him to read and write. And then she stopped. But she gave him just enough information so that he could go and educate himself. And he snuck around with books, and they had these readers that people would use in the 19th century, and Frederick Douglass had one, and he would go talk to other kids. He's about 12 years old, and he's doing this. Talk to other children. Can you help me out with this word? What does this mean? And so on. And so there was a heavily self-taught element to this. So he learned to read and write, and of course, there's a real native intelligence at work here with Frederick Douglass. And he learns to read and write and learns to do it really, really well. Eventually, he escapes his bondage. And moves into the North, and he becomes this prominent abolitionist, a great speaker. But of course, one of the best ways to reach people in those days was through the printed word. And so he had his own newspaper that was called the North Star, named obviously after the star in the sky that does not move. And if you're a runaway slave and you wonder which direction should I go, you know, follow that star. And if you follow long enough, you'll get to freedom in the North. His newspaper was called the North Star for many years. And he would print his abolitionist ideas. He would cover abolitionist happenings and so on. And eventually he had several thousand subscribers, most of them white, probably almost all of them white. And became a real voice for black freedom in the United States.
What do we know about Douglass as a publisher, as an editor? What was he like?
Well, he was a stickler for accuracy, and that's in part because he was constantly criticized as being a kind of figurehead. And people would say, there's no way a black man possibly could put out a newspaper. And people would visit his newspaper office hoping to find a bunch of white people who are actually putting together the paper because a black man couldn't do it, right? Well, Douglass actually did it. He spent many hours in his print shop working on this newspaper, putting it together. And he thought it was important that a black man actually do this, that he not be a figurehead, that he be actually the writer and producer and editor and publisher and all of that of his newspaper. So he did those things, and he was a real stickler for things like typos, because he thought every time if he spelt a word incorrectly, if there was just a typo in his newspaper, and of course anybody who's been involved in journalism knows you're going to have typos, you're going to have little mistakes like this constantly, you know, fix them, you correct them when you have to, all that kind of stuff. But Douglass thought every time there's a typo, every time there's a little error, people are going to use this as quote-unquote evidence of black inferiority. And so it's like the old Jackie Robinson rule, mm-hmm. that, you know, when Jackie Robinson broke into Major League Baseball, he couldn't be just an ordinary baseball player. He had to be a superstar. He had to be one of the very best. And if you could do that, then later on you could have other black baseball players who were ordinary. But the first one had to be excellent. And so Frederick Douglass just wanted to be excellent in everything he did. And so he worked very hard on this newspaper. And as I say, he wanted to get every little thing right.
Talking with John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program at Hillsdale College, about Frederick Douglass, the journalist. John, how would you compare his influence as an orator to his influence as a writer-publisher at that time?
Well, he was a terrific orator, and that's how he first came to attention. In fact, William Lloyd Garrison, the famous abolitionist who also had a newspaper called The Liberator, heard Frederick Douglass speak. And that's where he came to his attention. He thought, this guy's special, and let's have him, you know, bring him into our movement, have him write for my newspaper, which Douglass did. And so Douglass remained an orator for a long time. He also knew that he could really extend his reach with the printed word. And in fact, his audience would be much larger if he printed a newspaper that went out to thousands and thousands of people. You give a speech to, you know, get a few hundred people, that's awesome, right? But you know, the words vanish in the air. So newspaper made a big difference. He did it. Eventually, during the Civil War, he actually gave up his newspaper because he recognized, when I give a speech, other people will write about it. So he knew that he eventually became so popular and so good at this that he could give up the newspaper, just give the speeches, and then other people would do the printing journalistic work that he himself initially had done.
We sit here on the campus of Hillsdale College in Michigan, where Frederick Douglass made a couple of visits during his life, once during the Civil War, once toward the end of his life. Why was he here at Hillsdale?
Hillsdale College was a prominent abolitionist college that was influential in the founding of the Republican Party in the 1850s, and Frederick Douglass wanted to visit. So he came by here during the Civil War, made a stop in Hillsdale, spoke at the college chapel. He was on a speaking tour at the time. He also sat for a photograph in Hillsdale, and it's one of the most famous images of him. Actually, the photo was taken in Hillsdale, and then we reproduced widely, and the college actually owns the original, which is really neat. And so we have this close connection to him. He was actually on our campus speaking to our students way back when, and now there's this terrific statue of him. There's a nifty story about the second visit, which came in the late 1880s. He died in 1895, so this is well after the Civil War, and it's toward the end of his life. His great cause of abolition, he had prevailed in that cause, and of course there were other problems and challenges before him, but in the great movement and cause of his life, he had prevailed. But anyway, he came back here in the 1880s, and the college had forgotten this. And I had a student in journalism who was fond of looking at old copies of the campus newspaper. And she would look at them online, maybe microfilm, but she would just go look at really old copies of the campus newspaper, searching for story ideas. And, you know, what were things like way back when? How weird was student life, you know, in the 19th century, this sort of thing. And she produced a lot of good journalism doing that. As she was doing this, she discovered this record of Douglass having come back in the late 1880s, and as I say, the college had no institutional memory of it. Our college's historian didn't know about it, but there it was, the evidence that he had come back. He actually spoke in town at a roller skating rink of all things, but it was partly a college event. And she wrote about it. It was a big, you know, front page story when we did it. You know, Frederick Douglass came twice to Hillsdale College. And so we have this close connection. And I love the fact that one of our student journalists discovered this about, you know, one of America's great journalists.
John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College, talking Frederick Douglass, the journalist. John, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks, Scott.
Up next, we talk with Charles Kessler, author of the brand new book, Crisis of the Two Constitutions, The Rise, Decline, and Recovery of American Greatness. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m. on KCNR, 1460 a.m., or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe, or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
You get me every time.
KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at am1460.com. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 7 with the Sue McClain News Hour. I'll have your up-to-the-minute local news, national and international news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Followed by free fire radio from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. From noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal to riding roots, pop culture, and unsung heroes of our area. From 7 to 9, tune into Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at am1460.com. What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR 14.
At Redding Electric Utility, we recognize the value of education and the impact it can have on our families and our community. Interested in pursuing a career in science, technology, engineering, or math? Start by applying for a college scholarship or technical school grant offered by Redding Electric Utility. For more information about available scholarships and grants, visit cityofreading.org/RU scholarships. Applications must be submitted by March 10, 2021. Your future looks bright.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
This podcast is for storytellers of all kinds. We discuss everything from the hero's journey to how to slog through that pesky middle section of your book. From filling out your author's toolbox to answering your questions about the craft and the industry. From magic to mayhem.
In January, we're covering pearls from the masters of the craft. This includes names that you know like Stephen King, Lee Child, and Neil Gaiman. In February, we bring you writing prompts for the middle of your book.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We say hello and welcome to our brand new affiliate, WIBX 950 AM in Utica, New York. Thanks for listening to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We're joined by Dr. Charles Kessler, editor of the Claremont Review of Books, senior fellow at the Claremont Institute, and professor of government at Claremont McKenna College. His brand new book is out now, Crisis of the Two Constitutions, The Rise, Decline, and Recovery of American Greatness. Dr. Kessler, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Scott. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Read your book. It is tremendous. I guess we need to start by asking you exactly what you mean by two constitutions. Most of us, of course, know one constitution. What do you mean by two constitutions? How would you define the difference?
Well, I'm pointing to the lingering presence and the stubborn presence of increasing political polarization in America. It's reached the point where the tradition of the loyal opposition is fading away. That was the tradition which said, look, we have two political parties, but we have one constitution. And the loyalty to the Constitution is a higher loyalty. It trumps our loyalty to our individual political ideologies or parties. And that was the basis for, you know, many generations of the American political settlement. Increasingly, I think we don't have those circumstances anymore. What separates us is more important than what joins us together. And so instead of a tradition of loyal opposition, ours is a tradition of resistance, you know, with a capital R. That is that whichever party is in power regards the other party as illegitimate. And whichever party is out of power regards the party that's in power as illegitimate. And this has been sort of our politics for at least 20 years, and I think even longer than that if you look at it carefully. So I characterize this dispute as not one about how to interpret the common constitution, but really which constitution to interpret. And I think it's not a metaphor merely to say that we are moving towards a country which has, you know, one nation and two constitutions, which is not a good situation to be in. And I would say the two constitutions that are increasingly at war in our politics are the original constitution, which I call the Founders' Constitution, and the Liberals' Constitution, or the Progressive Constitution, which they like to call the Living Constitution.
And where do we see this fight playing out? How do we see those competing or opposing cultures staking out ground?
Well, you can see it in many areas, but in general, it's a disagreement about what ought to be in our Constitution, what ought to be constitutional for us. Just 4 years ago in 2016, the Democratic Party, in its platform, this was when Hillary Clinton was running, adopted a plank calling for the amendment of the First Amendment, it's amending the First Amendment to reduce its coverage so that more speech would escape the zone of freedom that the First Amendment sets out. More speech would be restricted. More political spending would be restricted by political categories. We have a debate about the First Amendment. We have a debate about the Second Amendment. Do we need it? What is it for? Those are the kinds of hot-button issues that increasingly divide the two constitutions, divide our images of what the two constitutions are.
Charles Kessler with us. His new book, Crisis of the Two Constitutions, is available now. In Chapter 5, you say that education and politics are inseparable. In what way do you mean that?
Well, it's all of the great books of political philosophy. The greatest of them are certainly books of education. Plato's Republic, Rousseau's Emile, Aristotle's Politics, and many others. And that's because politics, in its most capacious sense, is about making citizens. What kind of human being should be an American? What are the opinions about justice and fairness that should characterize an American? What are the habits? And those things, habits, opinions, beliefs, are shaped by education in the formal sense of schooling, but also by games, habits, songs, the whole culture of a country. And in that sense, politics, properly understood or understood from the highest point of view, is really about education, making a certain kind of citizen, making an American. And the founders thought very long and hard about this because they were forced to be in a position to make their own constitution mm-hmm. anew and of course, all their own laws. And so they had to, they looked at politics not simply as a part of social life, but as, in a way, the most formative part of social life, the sort that would give a form, a mold, to Americanism and to American civilization afterward. That sense, that noble sense of what politics is about, is what I mean when I say politics and education are inseparable.
And further into the book, how does American citizenship differ from multicultural citizenship? You discuss both, and is there a way to redeem American citizenship?
Yes. Well, the sort of classic criticism of American citizenship is that it has been limited, that there are in-groups as opposed to out-groups, and that chattel slaves, of course, being the most infamous of the out-groups, but one could also argue to some extent about the status of women and other groups and minority, and in the case of women, majority groups in American history.
Mm-hmm.
And the multicultural critique seizes on those facts and it denies the interpretation that statesmen like Lincoln and others brought to those facts, and instead says that the whole confecture of American citizenship is rotten. It's to translate this into modern, the most modern terminology, it's white supremacy. Or it's racist all the way down. And the only way to cure it of this mortal ill is essentially to transform it into a different thing, which is what thinkers on the left sometimes call multicultural citizenship, which is a citizenship that, on the one hand, is supposed to treat every culture equally, but on the other hand, is dead set against a comprehensive citizenship, dead set against traditional citizenship of the sort I was just speaking about, that's designed to sort of form character and opinions.
We'll pause right there. More in just a moment with Dr. Charles Kessler, his new book, Crisis of the Two Constitutions. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group, your primary care is our primary concern.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. This month's review is Kintsugi by Alec and Bradley. Kintsugi is a pleasurable, medium-bodied experience. Notes of cinnamon, earth, and wood are prominent throughout, with very subtle hints of amaretto and almonds. Come down to the shop for your Kintsugi today, 2143 Hilltop Drive, or visit us on Instagram at Tobacco and Brew.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5, 1460 AM.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. With all the talk about gun control and stripping firearms rights from law-abiding citizens, I just want you to remember that our country was founded on the idea that we would each be accountable to ourselves and each other for the safety of our society. Another important responsibility we have is a safe and effective use of a firearm. If that is your choice, give NFI a call at 999-1822 or find a register for one of our popular CCW courses at usgunpro.com. Remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
What is a hero? A hero serves when no one else is ready to. A hero helps everyone, never asking for any praise. They stand ready to do whatever is needed. They have picked up the mantle of heroism when we have needed it the most, and their tireless dedication can never be appreciated enough. We want to thank all of our local heroes. We could not get through these times without their courage. We thank you for everything that you do.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. For more information about Hillsdale College for prospective students, for alumni, or friends of Hillsdale, head to hillsdale.edu. We've been talking with Charles Kessler. His brand new book is Crisis of the Two Constitutions, The Rise, Decline, and Recovery of American Greatness. You mentioned earlier in the interview that what separates us is becoming more important than what brings us together. And to that point, if we can't agree on what American citizenship looks like, that seems a very worrying trend for the future.
Yes, I mean, I don't think it's inevitable that our disagreements will grow and become acute. They are growing, and they are becoming acute, but it doesn't necessarily have to go on like this forever or to a breaking point. However, there are certainly discouraging tendencies in American politics along these lines. Now, there are, I'm encouraged by some facts from the recent election. For example, in the 2020 election in California, a heavily Democratic state, which gave to Joe Biden, 70-some percent of its popular vote. At the same time, the voters, that same very Democratic, very liberal electorate, refused to repeal Prop 209.
Mm-hmm.
Prop 209 was passed a generation ago in a popular initiative, and it was designed to forbid the use of racial discrimination in university admissions, government hiring in California, and in a few other categories. So this was an attempt to repeal the prohibition against the use of race. It was an attempt to legitimize racial quotas and discrimination in admissions and hiring. So this was the next step in the identity politics agenda. And the people, the good news is, the people of California voted it down. And they voted it down pretty overwhelmingly by about 11%, which is more than twice the margin that the original Prop 209 had a generation ago when it won. So this is encouraging insofar as it suggests that even modern progressive Democratic liberals may see some stopping point. They may see that that there's a line they may not want to cross.
Mm-hmm.
in the legitimization of racial, gender, and other kinds of group discrimination as a formal part of American politics. And if that's true, that is a hopeful sign, because it shows you that the extreme left of the Democratic Party is rapidly isolating itself, or suggests at least that they're rapidly isolating themselves from their own base.
Charles Kessler is with us. The new book, Crisis of the Two Constitutions, The Rise, Decline, and Recovery of American Greatness. You spend some time in the book discussing the old new left and the new left. How would you describe the differences, and should we be concerned about that change?
It is a concerning change. The old new left was the left of the SDS, the Black Panthers, and others in the sort of classic 1960s, the anti-Vietnam War left, which started out inspired by the civil rights movement, but eventually in the course of the 1960s would abandon that nonviolent and even, you might say, religious orientation in favor of a much more Marxist and even nihilist orientation, and endorsing violence, endorsing the Weatherman's bombing campaign against police around the country, and things like that. In a way, we're trapped. We're still trapped in the 60s in our politics. But that was the old new left. The new left is the current identitarian left, to use that ugly word, which is so powerful on campuses today, but also in the streets of cities like Portland and Seattle, in the Black Lives Matter and Antifa and other such sort of quasi, militia movements. The new left is well, the old New Left was idealistic. It wanted to convert the country to its ways of thinking. It wanted to change the world to make it a better place. And this was part of, you know, a kind of romantic phase in American political life on campus and elsewhere in the early to mid-1960s. The new left is not idealistic at all. It expects every race, every ethnicity, every gender to assert itself, to follow its self-interest, and to attempt to win, to secure power over others. This is a much more, a darker new left. This is it's not idealistic. It is in its own mind extremely realistic, and offers no hope of redemption or of idealistic transformation. Its only hope is for victory over its enemies.
Charles, how much of this from the left starts on college campuses, or at least most college campuses around the country? What does it say about what's happening there today?
One doesn't really know what campus life is like, because most places, most colleges, unlike Hillsdale, are shut down, and
right.
Students have not been there because of the COVID year.
Mm-hmm.
But they will come back eventually, and we will be reintroduced to campus politics probably in the fall of this year. And there we will discover, I think, if it picks up where it left off, that it is, that cancel culture, political correctness, harsh restrictions on speech and behavior are still the norm and are the preferred method of left-wing campus forces in advancing their agendas.
Charles, have conservatives been less than successful in reviving the founders' constitution? And if you think so, how might tactics change to make a difference?
That's a very good question. I think, obviously, if you look at the 20th century, it really is a liberal century. Liberalism marched across America and conquered the high ground of American politics, beginning in the progressive decade at the start of the 20th century, but then reaching full flower in the New Deal and in the 60s and the Great Society period. Conservatism doesn't really get its innings, doesn't start winning until 1980 and Ronald Reagan's election and 1994. And Newt Gingrich's triumph in the House of Representatives, returning it after 40 years, I mean, an unprecedentedly long period under Democratic control, returning it finally in 1994 to the Republicans. 1980, 1994, the 20th century is almost over. That's why if you look at the 20th century as a whole, I think you could defend it as sort of the liberal century, the century that liberalism emerged in our politics and conquered it, at least temporarily, and changed it in many important ways. So conservatism has been fighting a rear guard action, a recovery action, to try to gain back the ground that it lost. You can locate it in a way in the universities. I mean, the change in the conception of America, the turn against American principles, founding principles, really is the work of the liberal academy in the course of the 20th century. My book is about that to a large degree. But conservatives have not figured out how to solve that problem.
Charles Kessler, editor at the Claremont Review of Books and senior fellow at the Claremont Institute, also professor of government at Claremont McKenna College. And again, the brand new book is out now, Crisis of the Two Constitutions, The Rise, Decline, and Recovery of American Greatness. Charles, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott. Great fun.
Up next, Dr. Ben Beyer from Hillsdale's Education Department begins an occasional series on definition. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Your friendly old change, Premier in all we do. The seasons are changing. Keeping your family healthy is important. So is the health of your car. The longevity of your vehicle depends on you to make sure your oil, radiator, coolant, windshield wipers, and other vital systems have all been taken care of so your car can bring your healthy family through the seasons. Drive into Premier Oil Change today and experience the friendly oil change. Premier doesn't require an appointment, and you don't drop your car off or wait. Premier changes your fluids while you stay in the comfort and safety of your own car. Enjoy a free beverage and free Wi-Fi while our trained technicians perform our comprehensive 30-point certified service. Earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park, or in Anderson across some Round Table Pizza. All locations, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Home of the friendly oil change.
Why wait for summer? Gear up for some fun right here in our own backyard. Head down to Wind River Resort and Casino to play our Gear Up 2021 Swipe to Win promotion. Drawings Thursdays at 6, 7, 8, and 9 p.m. Plus, all winners receive bonus entries into the final drawings on January 28th. $15,000 up for grabs. February 25th, two motorcycles and a Can-Am quad. And March 25th, a Yamaha ski boat. From Redding, Yamaha Sea-Doo. More drawings, more winners, more fun. WindRiver.com.
Pulse Urgent Care at 100 East Cypress Avenue would like to thank you for your support during 2020. Pulse is happy to announce they are reopening their urgent care services and are accepting patients by appointment only between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. on weekdays and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays. Pulse follows public health guidelines. Masks are required along with social distancing. Please call ahead at 530-722-1111 for a screening, appointment, and further information.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
It's never too late to achieve your dream, to turn a skill into a career. At Shasta College, we have late start classes right now and online classes where the commute from the couch to the class has never been easier. We're also offering 8-week compressed classes, same units, half the time. Now is the right time to upskill or reskill for high-demand jobs employers are hiring for. Find out more. Visit ShastaCollege.edu today.
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m. on KCNR 1460 AM or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe. Or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
You get me every time.
As Shasta County gradually reopens for business, we can all do our part to stop the spread of COVID-19 by wearing a mask when in public. Cloth face coverings help reduce the spread of germs by preventing the release of droplets when someone speaks, coughs, or sneezes. Wash your face covering often, ideally after each use or at least daily. Wash with detergent and hot water and dry on a hot cycle. Here is Shasta County Health Officer Dr. Karen Ramstrom.
Remember, wearing a face covering is not a replacement for physical distancing, frequent hand washing, and staying home when sick. Your mask protects me, and my mask protects you. Together, we can stop the spread.
For more information, including how to make your own cloth face covering, go to ShastaReady.org.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can get an email every time there's a new episode of the show. Go to radiohour.hillsdale.edu and enter your email address, radiohour.hillsdale.edu. We're joined by Dr. Benjamin Beyer, Associate Professor of Education at Hillsdale College. Dr. Beyer, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Starting a series, an occasional series this week, on definition. And so where should we start when we talk about definition?
Well, I mean, I think I'd have to give some sort of account or defense of why people ought to care, because...
That's not a bad way to start a conversation.
Sounds like a rather egg-headed thing that somebody might think about in an ivory tower, but how does it matter to everyone? But I actually think that definition matters quite a lot to our everyday life, because I'm sure we've all had an experience where we're in a conversation, maybe a heated one, you know, at Thanksgiving or in the public square, or who knows, and suddenly you realize that you've been, you know, wildly misunderstood, or that you're talking past the person, and usually it comes down to the fact that you're using the same word in a slightly different manner. And so if you can get that pinned down, it can really help you, you know, understand another person, have a dialogue, maybe even come to a meeting of the minds sometimes. So that seems like the general sort of, like, all of us as users of language, you know, who are seeking after truth or trying to persuade other people, it's handy. Then maybe just to get a teeny bit more technical, you know, so I'm involved in the classical education movement, in liberal higher education. Right there are some things that need definition. Liberal education, classical education, kind of squishy words that could use some defining, but not right now. But, you know, classical education holds out study of the seven liberal arts, one of which is logic. Mm-hmm. And so logic, Aristotelian logic, traditional logic, has an important spot within its study for definition. So there's the idea that definition is not just going to, you know, help us with our conversations, but it's actually going to liberate us. It's gonna free us to think more clearly, to actualize who we are as human beings. And then related to this, we might say, you know, how the philosopher thinks about definition.
Mm-hmm.
So the philosopher, of course, really appreciates being really precise when trying to speak about the way things are. But definition for the philosopher isn't just a tool, but it's an object of study, because, you know, in the philosophy of Aristotle, Thomas Aquinas, and others, when they go and look at the human mind and are trying to come to understand the human mind, they argue ultimately that there's three actions or operations of the human mind that distinguish it from other animals that also have many cognitive functions. And so the one act that's relevant here is sometimes called simple apprehension. So this happens with all of us all the time, where we have that moment where we go from, you know, you have a sense impression of this tree, that tree, another tree, and then you hold those things in your memory, the images or the ideas of them. The moment at which you sort of abstract away and have sort of a sense of tree-ness common to all trees, that's simple apprehension. And so the philosopher wants to study that. And then, right, what definition can do for the philosopher, and perhaps for all of us, is it can move us from that apprehension, which is rough and ready, like we kind of know what a tree is, but we couldn't really say it.
Mm-hmm.
But then we can move from apprehension to comprehension and actually express what a tree is with a strong definition. So every man, the philosopher, and classical education, we all need definition.
Let's get kind of really inside ourselves here. How do we define definition? What is a definition?
Well, poorly is how we define definition. You know, I think a place to begin is a good place to begin almost anything is Socrates. And Plato's Socrates, in the dialogue called the Meno, Socrates and Meno are speaking and trying to define shape and color. They're having a hard time. Meno is especially having a hard time, and Socrates is correcting him. But in the process of trying to get to some good definitions, which they never quite get there, Socrates gives us, I think, a good starter for defining definition. He comes to say, a good definition is going to account for every instance of a thing, only that thing, always. So that's kind of
a three-part standard to test the definition. Does this account for every tree, only trees all the time? Then we're in a good spot. And the Greek word that Plato uses there is interesting, too. It's the word from which we get the English horizon, and it probably literally translates as boundary, right? So you're fencing in, right, every instance of a tree and only trees to kind of get at the essence or the nature of what it is. But then the thing that happens as people try to define, they discover there's lots of different types of definition, different strategies for defining, and sometimes we'll have an object we wish to define, and we can't quite say of it, you know, that which counts for every instance and only instances. And so, right, the definition of Socrates doesn't work in every case. Mm-hmm. So to define definition, we'd start having all these caveats, like, well, some definitions are adequate and some aren't. And that's really what I think in the other instances of this series, what we can do is we can look at different types of definition and their strengths and their weaknesses, all ultimately in view of where we began, you know, so that we can just in our lives be a little bit more careful with words and better understand things.
Talking with Dr. Benjamin Beyer, Associate Professor of Education here at Hillsdale College, about definition. In our future segments, we'll dive deeper. Do we want to lay out some types of definition here as we begin?
I think that'd be great. So, you know, there's a group of definitions we might call definitions that have to do with words rather than things. Sometimes they're called non-logical definitions. This includes when you define from synonym or metaphor or etymology, or a related one, which kind of has to do with words, kind of doesn't, is when you define negatively what a thing isn't. So I think we should begin there because we're all most familiar with that, and those are helpful. But then we can turn to what are sometimes called logical definitions. And of those, there are four different types. And the weakest of those four is defining by accident, and then by property. And so we can talk about those two that don't quite get at the very heart of what a thing is. And then the final two logical definitions are essential definition and definition by cause. And you rarely get there, but you can hardly do better than that.
We might get into this later, but let me close maybe our first segment here on definition by asking, how do we agree on definition, and what happens when we disagree on definition?
That's a great question, Scott. You know, so a great and difficult question. So I think that, right, there are many things that hopefully we can come to agreement on, you know, where maybe we can find the definition of tree or dog or perhaps human being, something like that. And the reason for that is that those are naturally existing things, right? They're not artifacts, mm-hmm. and they're also simple, right? It's a species. It's not as complicated as defining classical education or humanism or conservatism or something. But I think if we begin with the strategies that can help us with those things that maybe are easier to come to agreement about, then we've got the strategies to at least speak clearly about the more complex things where we either, right, realize that we don't agree with someone else and we kind of have stipulated alternative ways of thinking about something.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can then just dialogue about that rather than talking past each other, assuming a different definition of a word. But it doesn't mean that with all this we'll just, you know, have, you know, paint by definition.
Sure.
It's easy, yeah.
But it helps to have clarity.
Exactly,
on
right.
Both sides.
Yeah.
Dr. Benjamin Beyer, Associate Professor of Education here at Hillsdale College, as we begin our occasional series on definition. Dr. Beyer, thanks so much for joining us on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Great to be with you. Thanks.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to John J. Miller, head of the Dow Journalism Department at Hillsdale College. He talked with us about Frederick Douglass, the journalist. Charles Kessler, his new book, Crisis of the Two Constitutions, The Rise, Decline, and Recovery of American Greatness. And finally, Ben Beyer from Hillsdale's Education Department, beginning his occasional series on definition. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.
Shasta Regional Medical Center.